soldiers and workers and increasingly peasants so distrusted the elite represented by the provisional government that they said they would only do things if the Soviet agreed. Dual power, this system of dual power, in some ways can be seen as a sort of political embodiment of Russia's polarized society, of one might say the tangibility of class divides within Russian life, a very dangerous phenomenon for the future of this liberal government, and also one that would play a key role in the coming to power of the Bolsheviks and in what they faced. Now, complicating all this, the Soviets also hesitated to exercise their full authority. They were convinced that under no circumstances could they, under the conditions of the moment, seek full state power. Though it's worth noting that after May, in the midst of a variety of crises in which popular confidence in the provisional government had fallen, they agreed to send several representatives of the Soviet leadership, basically Mensheviks and socialist revolutionaries, into the cabinet to create a coalition government. But they believed full power was something the Soviets could not take. And there were a number of reasons for this conviction. One, for especially the Marxist Mensheviks, was an ideological belief that history had stages. First, you'd have your democratic revolution, and then you'd have a socialist revolution. This was the democratic revolution in which power by right should belong to the bourgeoisie, so they couldn't take full power for themselves. They also, though, believed in a less ideological but very concrete way that the time was simply not right for a socialist revolution in Russia, for workers and soldiers and peasants to come to power. This was, after all, a terrible crisis of war. And they believed that such a social revolution would lead to internal fighting, perhaps an outbreak of civil war, which would take Russia out of the war and certainly lead to defeat. And defeat at the hands of Germany and Austria, it believed, would take away all the freedoms that had been gained. This was not the time to make further revolution. More generally, they believed, quite understandably, Russia was simply too backward to build socialism. Every Marxist, and indeed most socialists, believed socialism would happen in an advanced industrial country. Russia certainly wasn't at that level yet. In the course of 1917, this political situation deteriorated rapidly. Growing opposition could be seen to the provisional government among workers and soldiers. And remember that after May, this was opposition to a provisional government that even included socialists in it, representatives of the Soviet. But it was growing. The Bolsheviks, who in fact shared this discontent, succeeded in actually winning majorities in the Moscow and Petrograd Soviets by the fall of 1917 and then at the National Congress that followed. So frustrated were many workers and soldiers with the failures, which I'll describe in a moment, of the provisional government that they turned to the Bolsheviks as a solution. When this happened in October 25th, to jump to the end of the story, at the National Congress of Soviets and the Bolsheviks won a majority and declared themselves to be a new state power, other socialist parties in disgust walked out, leaving the Bolsheviks free to create a one-party socialist government. Now, the first question is, why did this happen? Why did the provisional government fall after less than 8 months in power, from March 2nd, formally when the Tsar abdicated, to October 25th? Or to put this question in more historical terms, why, after a century of struggle that we have seen to bring civil liberties and democracy to Russia on the basis of a thriving public sphere, did the victory of this struggle, and that is what happened in the beginning of March of 1917, why did victory in the struggle, marked by the end of monarchy, by the coming to state power of the representatives of civil society, and starting in May, even socialists, why did this success not last even 1 year? First step in answering this question is to ask, what did the provisional government actually do, and of course, what did it not do? First, it's worth recognizing the provisional government was deeply committed to thoroughgoing democracy in Russia, and its accomplishments in this direction were really quite impressive. It declared complete civil liberties, absolute freedom of speech, of press, of assembly, of association, of the right to strike, everything that was partially declared in 1905 but always filled with limitations in the years following was now absolute in Russia. The provisional government freed within days of coming to power thousands of political prisoners and exiles from Siberia, and to make matters more absolute, abolished the entire old police, most importantly, the secret political police of the Tsar, the Okhrana. They abolished flogging, which was still legal in Russia. They abolished exile to Siberia. They even abolished the death penalty. They also removed all legal restrictions on nationality or religion. They declared in the face of the law, everybody